You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 17th, 2020. And if the PlayStation 5 is bigger than the Xbox, is it better?
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Abor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And we now know what it looks like. We have seen the unknown.
We have seen the lights.
The beast has finally been sighted.
Have you seen that building in, I think it's Brasilia? It's like a huge modernist tower, two towers that are right next to each other. That's what the PlayStation 5 looks like.
It is a we'll look back on it as a era in architecture and be like, yeah, there, that was for the 2020s.
I mean, you know, on its vertical side, right, it looks like a modernist futuristic tower, doesn't it?
I mean, this looks like something, this looks like a console that would be the Mass Effect skinned pack-in bundle, you know,
like
if you were going to make
Avengers
a console,
Tower skin.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like it looks like, and I don't mean this to just like dunk on it, but like it is such a strange design that it makes it look like a promotional branded item.
Yes. I mean, I will dunk on it. I think it's fucking hideous. And I've seen
people,
I do. I really don't. Do you like it?
I mean, I guess I don't really feel that strongly one way or the other. It just is surprising how different it looks.
I think the reason I don't like it is because it looks, I mean, it looks like a modernist, it's like a version of a future building that is just, it feels tacky in a way, you know?
Mm.
What I will say, though, and maybe it deserves more respect for this, it does look like it has ample air vents.
Yes.
Other thing I keep imagining,
very clean lines. It looks very aerodynamic.
That's true. Yeah,
regardless.
when inevitably someone's partner throws it out of their window in revenge, it'll just sail right across and into the street. My other question, and I know that this has been confirmed, that it can lay on its side, but I will have mine lay on its side. Like the way that my entertainment system is set up is not that I can have like a fucking tower on each side of my TV. You know?
Yeah, totally. Totally. So, I mean, you got to imagine that the vast majority of these things, because just thinking about what you can buy at IKEA or Target, you know, the TV hutches do not fit something like this.
Yeah. Why do they keep showing it vertical then? Just because it has a astounding figure?
I mean, it just, I think it just looks more striking. I mean,
yeah.
Because if you look at it on its side, it does look a lot more
like tilting my head right now.
Okay. I mean, are you seeing, did you see the gallery of them? Like there was kind of like a gallery set of shots.
No, I don't think so.
We can look at it as we talk, but like there are specific screenshots that show the side, basically it laying on its side, and it looks a lot more like a PS3 because the PS3 was curved and it was more of like that dome, you know, almost like a barrel shape, you know?
It looks like a binder that's been warped with like stacks of magic cards that I have in there.
This is your it doubles as your magic card binder.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like an obtrusively mal-shaped Wi-Fi router.
It does have a routery feel to it. I will say that, but now we see why they position it vertically, because if you look at it vertically, there's a lot more symmetrical, there's a symmetrical nature to it.
Yep. As opposed to the weird like twisty bend that it seems to have on its side.
On its side it looks more like the Sydney Opera House or something, you know.
Yes, another piece of modern architecture.
Yeah, there is something, but I mean it also is in stark contrast to the Xbox One Series X, which is just a pure brutalist rectangle.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. There's something about the brutalist look I really like, though. You know,
I don't disagree. I think it's kind of, I mean, Microsoft is weirdly going to be their console is trying to be as unobtrusive as possible. It looks like a subwoofer, you know.
Do you think that they're trying to evoke the desktop tower?
Maybe. I mean, to me you got to believe it's more expensive to produce something that has curves in it than just doesn't, you know. And also just from the heating thing, or the cooling thing rather, it's an interesting tactic.
In terms of a PlayStation 5's shape.
You don't...
Because these are all going to run very hot.
I would imagine so. I mean, it sounds like both of the manufacturers are way more willing to address the heat problems than they were last time around, which is nice. The thing about the PlayStation 5, the look of it anyway, is that this doesn't happen by accident.
Right.
You know, the Xbox Series X, I mean, that's kind of like what the target render looked like. And they were like, okay, whatever, just manufacture it like that. You know, and I'm sure it wasn't like that, but it's much easier to, think of a design that's just a rectangle versus like really taking a chance as to what something looks like.
Yeah. That's
maybe
true.
For better, maybe for worse.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder if they actually did think about the real estate that would be there for like new versions or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
Well,
what do you think about the reveal that there is a disc and discless version at launch?
Yeah. I was just going to say, here's the thing. I have not had a disk drive in my PC in a decade, you know, like it is not something I need. It goes back to the conversation that you and I had, what, maybe 6 weeks ago, a couple months ago, about hardware. What games do we want to keep in our house? What games do we want to get rid of in terms of having actual disks? Do we actually plug those back in, or do we just use digital versions if we have the opportunity? Are they there for keepsakes or mementos or even as art displays? You know how I land on that. Generally speaking, having more stuff in my house is not something that I'm interested in. Yeah. So in a way, I am actually excited that there's a version that doesn't have the disc, because then it forces me to do the habit that I kind of want to be following anyway, which is just not having a disc drive, not having stuff cluttering my apartment.
Would you use it for the DVD player?
No, I mean, I have a 4K Blu-ray player that's dedicated to playing 4K Blu-rays, you know, and those are often better anyway. They've got better remotes. There's like their UI is built for that. It makes a lot of sense. I am a big movie buff, and I will always take the best experience through that dedicated device unless I can help it.
Well, that's the funny thing, because that is, you're still in the camp of physical, because it's still the best fidelity experience.
Yes, absolutely. But is that the case on the PlayStation 5 hardware?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, doubtful. I'm just thinking of myself where, like, I don't even have a 4K TV yet. And so it's, if I were to get this, it'd be like, I mean, this is a whole nother thing, but like, this is not just a $500, $600 investment. This is like a $1,000 plus investment, because why would you get this if you didn't have a 4K TV, you know?
Yeah, because it looks so cool. Look at how spiky it is at the top.
I mean, yeah, it's just, I mean, it does look, especially that discless version, very sexy, very symmetrical.
Well, here's my question then. What do you think it would be in terms of price if you were to get the version without the disk drive? Are you saving hardware space, or is this just an aesthetic decision?
I mean, I was going to ask that same thing, where let's just like, I mean, this is a kind of like, would you do X for a dollar? Like, so if they, you know, if they launched the discless version for I don't know, $450.
Sure.
Would you buy the version with a drive just in case for $500? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there has to be a line there where it's like, because if it was like a $50 difference, I'd be like, sure, give me a drive. That's fine. Like, I don't have a 4K DVD player, so this would be it for me. So, you know, I could justify that. But then what? $75?
I mean,
$100?
My other question is, what are the additional benefits, right? We've seen the system looks sleeker. It doesn't look as though they're using that space to have, say, a larger SSD or something.
Yeah.
I would wonder, is there value? Like, does it save on heating, maybe? Does it use less power overall. Maybe. Like if it, I don't know if it's, maybe it's probably uses very little power, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. That's a very good question. I have no idea. $50. I don't know. I mean, I think if I'm going to save $50 to do something that I kind of want to be doing anyway, which is not having an excuse to buy more stuff, right, I would take that deal. Yeah. If it's the exact same price, I don't know. Probably not.
It would astonish me if it was the same price. Like, it can't be the same price, right? Because there's, like, you know, the Blu-ray consortium to pay, and there's, you know...
I mean, it's the same price to buy a fucking digital game as it is to buy a disc version of it.
Yeah, but that's because the game economy is broken. Like we're, you know, we're talking about the hardware economy. Like, there's actual real costs that you can calculate from, like, this thing without a disc drive costs... There is less plastic, therefore, this is literally cheaper to make.
I mean, I wonder if the price point also makes it more palatable, right? Like, think of it from Sony's perspective. It's actually a brilliant idea, right? You take a swath of the people that are being more budget conscious and saying, look, you want the latest console, great. Here's a cheaper version without a disc drive. Not only does it give them the sense that, oh, I'm getting this at a discount, where realistically they're not. It also pushes them into digital purchases through the Sony marketplace and away from competitors that take a cut. It's it's a great idea from Sony's perspective.
I mean, the fact that this is launching without a disc drive, I mean, we always got there, like, you know, the Xbox has offered disc driveless consoles for a while now, but not at launch, you know?
Right.
And the fact that we're going to have this new console launching that has a full frontal assault against the retailers is super interesting.
Yeah, poor GameStop. What did they ever do to consumers? Oh, right.
Hell, okay. I mean, if you're Amazon, you know, it's like it's you now have something. If you're Target or Best Buy, you now have this thing sitting on your shelf that is a one-time purchase for people, not a repeat purchase thing, which I think is a pretty big deal just in the grand scheme of things.
Do you think Microsoft was like, fuck, why didn't we think of that?
I don't know. Microsoft has a bunch of weird stuff going on. Like, you know, all the backwards compatibility stuff and all of the... I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see something. I mean, I think this brings us to the point of probably the most frustrating point of this whole stupid song and dance we're doing, which is no price to be seen.
Yes. Yep. On either parties. Is it just a game of chicken? You know?
It really is. Like, this is like an old school console wars style game of chicken, which is kind of cool, but also very annoying.
I mean, I hope it's just one of those, you know, sometimes on Amazon or other retail outlets, you cannot see the price of something until it's already in your cart. That's what it's going to be. Yeah.
What do you think you should pay for it?
Yeah, dude, it's wild. Can you imagine going to like a donut shop or something and be like, I'm not going to tell you how much that donut is. Sorry. You want it or not? It's in a bag. No take backsies.
I will tell you in November.
Yeah. Bizarre.
I mean, that's the crazy thing is like this thing is what, 5 months away?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, both the Xbox and the PlayStation are saying holiday season. So, I mean, you got to believe that they're going to be out by Black Friday, whatever that's going to look like this year. God help us.
I mean, is price collusion still against the law? Because I feel like I would just call up my buddies at Microsoft and be like, look, guys, can we chat?
I mean, yeah, it really does feel like no one wants to be the first to go, like, because the consoles are so similar to each other and they're launching at the same time and exclusive games are seemingly fewer and fewer, except you wouldn't know that to see it from the PlayStation reveal, I guess. But the one differentiating feature is the price at this point.
Yeah. And cognitively, from a consumer perspective, it's the price of right rules, you know? If they name a number and your number is $10 less, you won, you know?
Right. What do you think? I think the disc drive will be $600.
The disc drive, $600. Fuck, that's so expensive.
I bet you.
Ah, man.
But I bet the discless drive will be like $450 or something like that. Like, I think they're gonna really try to get people into the ecosystem.
Well, realistically, it's gonna be like $599.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then what, like $549.99 for the disc.
It's so hard to have something that's over $500. You know.
Do you think they would go as low as $499?
I think they should, because I mean, one, man, who the hell's going to be buying this? Like the unemployment rate is larger than it's been since the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not done yet. So yeah, I just don't know how you bring something that to market yet.
Well, I mean, maybe you do the opposite and you say, okay, you know what? This is going to be a niche item for the first year. Yeah, it's a premium product. We'll slow the roll on a lot of support. We'll slow the roll on media spends. We will lower our expectations on the first year, assuming that, you know, because the means of production have not been taxed yet due to the economic downturn. It's largely a sort of a weird, arbitrary, almost like fake unemployment rate. So when that ends, we'll come back next year and boom, we'll have a discount and we'll go back down to that 500 value.
Maybe. I could see that. I mean, the other thing that could happen, back to your point about getting people into the, you know, the PlayStation Plus ecosystem, is if you're willing to have a thinner margin or maybe even possibly a loss on the discless version, there's probably some calculation that says if we can get people into buying games, then all of a sudden they will make up the difference for what we lose on the hardware. And if they're not buying a bunch of games from GameStop or Best Buy or whatever anymore, then every single game that is purchased, Sony gets that money directly, you know?
Yeah. But there's still that factor of how many people play only, what, 2 to 3 games per year, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, and it's internet connection speed and reliability at the point where people truly... A console-specific gamer, would they truly want to go full digital instead of being able to get a disc? Although, you know, I can't remember the last time I got a disc and it just played right off the bat.
You have fat downloads anyway. Yeah,
exactly. So it's like I just don't know what if you are borrowing games or trading them with friends and family, then I feel like that's the one remaining use case where, you know, any game that you buy now is going to have a huge day one patch, a huge install time, like all that stuff.
Yep. Totally. Man. What is your over under on announcing the price? Like August 30th?
I mean, it can't be. I would say the earliest is August 1st and the latest is probably October 1st.
God, October 1st. 1 month right? out.
I mean, like how, I mean, like how I imagine this comes out, like, you know, I don't have the calendar in front of me, but like, you know, some Thursday in November before Thanksgiving, you know?
Yeah. I'm just going to pick a date so that I can look back and say I was right. I'm going to say September 8th.
That's it.
That's the date, everybody. Hot scoops. You heard it here first. We're 20 minutes in. You want to talk about some video games?
Why? We're not going to see any of these till 2022.
that's a totally fair point. Oh man, now that makes me sad.
I mean, there were a lot of cool things. I mean, I will say that I felt like this presentation was much more impressive than the Xbox one.
Also, Grand Theft Auto 5 is coming, and that game came out like 10 years ago. So,
what jumped out at you other than the fact that Rockstar has turned into the Grand Theft Auto 5 company now?
Spider-Man is the highlight. I think that's much everyone's highlight.
So what's the deal with this game? I've heard some stuff back and forth where it's like this is an expansion versus a full game, or this is like a full game and not an expansion.
So
like,
the studio, I think the studio, the head producer or the studio said that this was in fact a standalone game. Standalone in a world that's like, you know, post-infamous First Light or Last Light or whatever. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Standalone could still be based off of that same core infrastructure. Right. It could be the same map. There could be like a few new abilities and a whole new storyline, but it's its own quote-unquote game, right?
Right.
That might be the case. In either case, though, I don't care. Like, I loved Spider-Man. Like, it was so fun. Having an excuse to swing around that city more, especially one where I get to play as Miles Morales, fucking sign me up.
Yeah, it looked very cool. And it's, they were talking about how, I felt like the thing that they did well in this with all the games were they followed through on like all of those Mark Cerny talks about like what they were trying to do with the architecture of PlayStation 5 and like, you know, the load times will be minuscule and you'll be able to change sets very quickly. And a lot of these games seemed to put that stuff into practice in a way that was cool to see. And I think that's an obvious one, right? You're swinging through the city at an increasingly fast rate. There's no load ins or pop ins or whatever. It's a completely seamless experience. All that stuff looks really cool.
Yep, for sure. Let's see what else. Stray. I know some people were excited about Stray. This is the cat sci-fi game.
Cyber cats.
I don't know what this game is. Like, this trailer feels like a showcase of world building and not actually gameplay. There's another indie game that's already in production. I think it's called Peace Island. That's also about an island full of cats in which you play a cat. So I feel like I've already made my feline game of choice.
I've chosen.
I've chosen where I draw that line, but, you know, that sounds cool.
Annapurna, which is cool. It's so interesting to see Annapurna have such a huge presence now. We kind of saw the growth of that publishing house, and now they're highlighting console exclusive.
Edith Finch, was that their first published title?
I forget. It might have been. Because then they started publishing all those adventure games and like a bunch of other things.
Yep. There's a game called Returnal, which is by far the worst name I've seen in a long time.
the game looked cool. It looks kind of like a roguelike shooting, like arcade shooter, basically.
Yeah, I mean, this is from the folks who did Resogun, which was a pixel shooter.
Yeah. But one of those ones that was kind of meant to show off the new console, and
yes,
it seems like a cool thing that to do. Jeez. Returnal. I mean, I know it's hard to get like trademarks and copyrights and stuff like that, but good lord, that name.
That's up there with Death Stranding.
And look how that turned out. Ooh, maybe this is game of the year material.
So the actual game that stood out to me the most, Demon's Souls remake.
Oh man!
The Demon Souls remake is exciting to me because I have not played Demon Souls, but per the conversation about keeping shit in my house, I still have a copy of Demon Souls that I've not touched because I just refuse to throw that out, right?
It would be disrespectful.
It's like those weird people who keep like a piece of their child's umbilical cord in their house, you know? It's like, this is the source. This is the source of it all.
I mean, honestly, that sounds like an item you would get in Demon's Souls, so I think it's pretty on brand.
It is quite literally an item you get in Bloodborne. There are three of them. Oh, yeah. You have to them to see a special ending.
So this is fine.
It totally makes sense.
I'm very excited about this because I played the original Demon's Souls, but I have a feeling that if I went back to it, I would really chafe against how basic it was compared to something like Bloodborne or Dark Souls 3. It'll be cool to see the upgrades that they do to the systems.
And there's so many quality of life improvements that Dark Souls 3 implemented, even above Bloodborne, where you still had to go back to the dream in order to like fast travel around the map. Yep. I think that this would make the game so much more playable. Absolutely. And I think they've just gotten the aesthetic down really well over the years that I think being able to bring it to life in a new way. And I've seen videos that do side-by-side comparisons because the trailer is almost exactly the same trailer as the original Demon's Souls. And it is night and day. It is an absolutely stunning improvement.
I really like Demon's Souls as well. Just it was a cool entry to that whole genre of Souls-likes.
Yeah.
It'll also be exciting because I felt that Dark Souls 3 was very influenced by Demon's Souls, and I'm excited for you to see Demon's Souls.
I'm curious to see how different it'll be in just terms of, you know, actually feel of gameplay. So
I was very interested in Deathloop, the Arkane Studios. We had heard about this. I don't know. I feel like they announced it a couple years ago at E3, but it had gone fairly dark.
Yeah, the last E3, they had a really great trailer between these two characters, right? The male and female protagonists that were in a sort of, death loop.
A death loop?
It's a Groundhog's Day scenario. We've seen this many, many times, right? At this point, they even say it's a Groundhog's Day scenario in movies where that happens.
Yeah.
the trailer seemed to really position them off of one another. This new trailer didn't seem to do that as much, but it did provide you a lot more gameplay, which definitely feels more Arkane Studios than the first trailer. Specifically, jumping from great heights and backstabbing people in the neck with like switchblades, teleporting around the map.
Mechanic,
like that. Freezing time. It feels like Dishonored in a lot of very good ways. I wonder what the shtick is. Like, there's part of me that wonders, you know, based upon the premise of the trailer, I think the main character says something about there's eight people that I need to assassinate. Yeah. I love the idea of a game where you need to eventually kill all eight in one night, but in the beginning of the game, you just have to go and kill each one and optimize until you get to like the perfect run where you kill all eight. You know, there's something in my head where I'm like, if this is an open world island game and not broken down into discrete levels, and it's like a lived space, it could be really fucking cool. I have lost a sense of what the whole dynamic is between these two characters, though. And it does seem like you can play as the woman, right? You get that sense.
That was like the stinger of the trailer. Like, it made it seem like, because it switched to her perspective.
Right. So, I don't know. I mean, part of me wonders if maybe there's even like a PvP element to this.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like a multiplayer aspect, if you wanted to opt into it or something. I mean, honestly, like kind of like a Dark Souls where like you could have a Red Phantom show up and that's the other character.
Oh, dude. Yeah. make it a Strand game. We found it. And we've solved it.
Let's see. Have you ever played a Ratchet and Clank game?
Not even once. That's not true. I think at GameStop when they've had those little kiosks.
Back in the day when we still touched things in public.
I think people like Ratchet and Clank. And to be honest, they always look like fun. It's just never been something I've approached.
Same. 100%. I don't think I've ever even played like a demo of a Ratchet and Clank game. But I've always been impressed by the look of it and the animation, and it just seems like a high quality video game. I've just never played it, and this one was it reminded me a lot of those Mark Cerny talks where it was kind of a gameplay, you know, loop that they were showing, and even in the cutscenes they were showing the kind of warping between different worlds and universes and stuff, and doing all that stuff with minimal technical load time or anything was pretty cool looking.
It looked great. I mean, slinging into another world, very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what else. I thought the Abe's Odyssey game looks really exciting to me.
Man, if you're Lorne Lanning, I mean, how long has he been doing these games? He's like the Kojima model where like he's done Oddworld games for what, 20 years more?
Yeah. It just feels like, if you're going to tell a game about like an uprising of a subdued race, now's a pretty good time, you know? And like,
very,
I don't know.
Much.
There's been this sort of serious but also tongue-in-cheek humor through line through all of those games. And it takes that Lemmings idea maybe too far to the extreme. I know the Odyssey games aren't everyone's cup of tea. I've always really enjoyed them. I thought the world building was great. I thought they were genuinely moving at times. Yeah, I'm excited to get another one, man.
Yeah, and it's been a while. I don't even remember what the last Oddworld was.
Yeah.
We saw, I think this was the first time we actually saw actual, like, gameplay, but of Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yes, yeah. Although, I can't make sense of that gameplay. I watched the trailer again before recording.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's going on here. It looks like
It kind of has that immersive sim style look, you know? Like a Dishonored style thing, but just more of a, you know, maybe a little bit more combat focused.
Yeah.
But I remember that, because that was what, a last E3 thing or something?
Yes.
But they hadn't said much about it. And also, this is the one, correct me if I'm wrong here, but like this is the Shinji Mikami one, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, anything. Like, sign me up for whatever that guy does. Like, you know, anyone who made RE4, Vanquish, I mean, there's just a very good pedigree with his games, and so I'm very interested in
it. I think what throws me off about this trailer is the appearance of Slender Man, I think is what is the deal. Speaking of Slender Man, actually that's not a good transition. I don't think there's any other Slender Man in here. Resident Evil Village. Is that your jam? Do you want a RE7 sequel?
So I never played RE7 because what was that? That was the VR focused one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, it's kind of cool that there's like this dual thread of Resident Evil where there's they're remaking ones that, you know, by all accounts seem to be very good quality. And then they're also doing their innovative ones that are trying something different, you know, oh, this is a VR game, or this is kind of a more, you know, adventure style versus like a shooter or something. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of funny, but like at a certain point they're going to converge, you know, they're going to run out of ones to remake.
Yeah, sure. That's so funny. Yeah. They say that they're not making this on current gen because there's like mechanics about exploration that they want to like, you know, solve for that only the next gen consoles can do, which I don't know if that really makes sense, but you know, it looks cool. It looks very creepy. Yeah.
Okay. One of the games that I'm most excited for before, you know, we get too far along here. Bug Snacks.
Remind me what this one was. I don't have that one up. It was not on my list.
I feel like, did I misremember if this was part of the, this may not have been part of the event, and it was.
No, I think it was. I think it was, with the weird strawberry creatures and stuff. Okay, yes. I'm watching it now. Yeah, yeah.
This is by the studio that brought you Octodad.
Oh, I must have missed that. Okay, well now I'm interested.
And so it looks like there's a very kind of Keita Takahashi slash. Shoot, what was the Microsoft game with the Viva Pinata?
Yeah, Viva style. Pinata. Yes. Yeah. Well, where there's like people with like hot dog hands and stuff. Like, yeah. I don't know what the hell is going on. Yeah.
where it's like you eat different food and it turns your body into that food. And I mean, I am also just super interested in what that what that developer would do. With a seemingly much more like a bigger scope style of game.
Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that game, I mean, I'm very excited about it because Octodad it was one of my favorites, and it'll be cool to see what they do with this thing.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Horizon Forbidden West.
Yes.
I never finished Horizon Zero Dawn, which
did you like it though?
I did. I feel really bad about it. I did actually really enjoy it. It's just one of those games where, you know, halfway through, it got distracted. The map was really big, and then I forgot to go back. And honestly, I think part of it was I got distracted by doing so many of the side quests. It suffers from this is a massive open world, and there's a bunch of stuff to do that I ignore the main storyline, and it stops driving me through the world as a result. Yeah. I would like to go back, because I actually do know a lot of people who they think Horizon is one of their favorite games. Like, they loved that to death. I'm very excited for everyone else's excitement for Forbidden West. So yeah, maybe it's time to go back. And also, I should say
the trailer was really cool looking.
And Zero Dawn was one of the most gorgeous games I'd ever played on the PS4. Like the lighting alone, like when there's a sunrise and you're riding your robot elk through the woods and it's like glistening through the trees, it is genuinely memorable. I have screenshots that I had saved that are probably some of the best, most gorgeous looking screenshots I've ever taken. And they were not using any kind of crazy camera mode customizations. Yeah. It was just that beautiful. On the PlayStation 5, man, this is going to be a stunning game to look at when you're playing.
I mean, and as dorky as this is, I actually think the story is interesting. Like the far-flung apocalypse to me is cool. And like I don't know if the first Horizon was like this, but they're clearly, she's gotten to San Francisco. You know, they have the Golden Gate covered in, you know, moss and trees and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Although they don't have the new things that they put in that make an annoying sound.
Or do they? Maybe that's the beginning of the robot apocalypse.
Yeah. Additionally, there were a bunch of indie games that were shown on the PlayStation 5. There's like a teen coming of age furry game, Goodbye Volcano High.
Can we call this, because it was like dinosaurs, right? So are they scalies? Like, well, they're not furries, right?
I think they're like dragons. So I think that's still, I don't know crazier. What the furry community calls scalies, if that's a thing, but you know, that was cool.
They had that game by the studio that did Hyper Light Drifter. I don't have it in front of me right now. It looked kind of like a rollerblading game, like an adventure rollerblading game.
Yep. There's another game. I forget what studio it's in, but it's that like young girl 3D game. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It was the one where the astronaut found the robotic little girl on the planet.
No, that's Pragmata. That's from Capcom. Actually, that looks kind of interesting too, but Pragmata is weird. No, I'm thinking, I think it's called Kena, Bridge of Spirits.
Oh, okay.
I found it, yeah. I really like when any of the major publishers spend a good deal of time going over the indie games that they have showcased.
Yes.
Yeah. So that always, you know, fills me with excitement, and I get the sense that they're supporting that significantly. So,
I mean, it was just... I mean, not that there weren't any interesting looking games at the Xbox showcase, but it really felt like this one had a big variety and was much more practical about what those games actually are. You know, Ratchet and Clank, like you could see that thing and it looked like it was kind of a beta version or an alpha version of a game. Yeah. You know, it wasn't just this crazy sizzle reel of things, and which was, I appreciated it after having so many months of build up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so you don't know price. We don't know price. The hardware is almost functionally the same besides some storage differences, which to be honest, I think most people won't understand, let alone feel when they're playing. Right. If you had to make a call, Xbox, PS5,
man, it's so hard. I feel like the Xbox services are better now.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of Game Pass and what they're doing. But I mean, in terms of games, what I saw from Sony was much more compelling than what I saw from Microsoft. So it's just, I don't know. It's a really tough one.
Yeah. The crossplay thing for Xbox in particular is the big stickler for me.
Yeah.
Where there's this added value that I have a good gaming PC. I can play pretty much everything on here on my gaming PC anyway, and I don't need to play it on my TV. But it's much more comfortable to be chill on my couch in the living room than in this hot, tiny office. So So part of me is like, I could just get an Xbox and all of the games that are available across platforms on PC and there. If I have PC friends, great, I'll hop on and play that with them on PC. If it's just a console, then great, I'll play it on console, and that'll be that. Or on the other hand, I go, well, there's a bunch of cool games I want to play on the PlayStation 5. I'll just get that. That will be my console, and anything I want to play on PC, I'll just get on PC, and that way I'll create sort of a divide between the two. So
And then you can even say, like, eventually when, you know, there might be some exclusives here and there, or maybe you're not ready to upgrade your PC, but the Xbox has come down in price such that it's more cost effective. Like, you can pick one up later, and I don't know. It's it's tough, because I really do feel like Microsoft has made, like, I'm not even a customer of Game Pass, and I appreciate the value from afar, you know?
For sure, yeah. And I do not and have not owned an Xbox One. I mean, this is the first cycle that I just took a pass on from Microsoft. Usually, I just own both, but I never found that value. But I'm definitely at a point now looking at that landscape where, you know, I could see why it would be difficult to make a decision right now, for sure.
I mean, it really, I think it's about, you know, launch games, what happens to them. And then also, I mean, this is Microsoft's, like, there's probably a bunch of people like us that are teetering on the fence that got kind of turned off by the whole Xbox One era. And now they're like, you know what? If we come in $100 under PlayStation, we could probably convert those people, you know?
Yep. And that's why we won't know the price until November 26th.
At 11:59 p.m.
We'll quietly go out. You know what? Here's what Xbox should do. The price should just say $1 less than those other guys and just give out coupons, you know? It's like, you know, when you see those stores where it's like, you can buy this mattress and we'll promise your mattress will be less than...
Price
matching. Bring in a coupon, prove that value, we'll give it to you for less. Call it a day, Microsoft.
Honestly, they could do that once they... Because Microsoft services... machine has spun up so much, they could easily say, all right, you know, so we're the same price, but if you buy an Xbox before this date, we are going to credit you for X months of Game Pass, or we're going to just give you $100 in game credit. You know, like they could easily do that on the back end of, like, they could self-bundle at this point, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I don't know. It's pretty...
I mean, Sony could do the same thing, though.
Yeah, but I feel like the Microsoft stuff is just so much more mature in that they have this this service that is a known entity. Like, I still don't know. I mean, I guess the you know, PlayStation Plus monthly games or whatever are still a thing, but I haven't got the sense that, like, Microsoft has gotten, like, big games, you know, first run games. Like, I think The Outer Wilds was The Outer Wilds, I think, was a Game Pass game. And, like, there's been other things that are first-run games. It's not like, well, yeah, I could play Grand Theft Auto 5 or whatever, but I get it. I played that 4 years ago. It's cool that it's free, Sony, but, like, it's not like something brand new.
Yeah, for sure.
Which will give me... which one will give me the most anime games?
Oh, I mean, PlayStation 5 for sure, right?
Has to be, right?
Has to be, yeah. And problem solved.
Yeah.
take my money.
But then again, Xbox still has an exclusive dominion over Shenmue, right?
That's very true. Yeah. But Shenmue's not anime enough, dude. We're talking like One Piece, like full.
Right, right. Yeah, we're talking more stuff. Dragon High School Saga.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
Man, it will be very fascinating. I felt like I feel like this ratcheted it up, and the next thing that Microsoft does will have to meet this, which is super exciting.
My guess is each of these, both Microsoft and Sony, will each have to have another one of these, a whole nother presentation that's announcing the price, announcing more like launch titles or something to satiate it.
Launching the services side of, like, really putting a point on, like, this is what you're getting in our ecosystem. You know?
I mean, there has to be one more of these each, right? I think my guess is that these will come, I would say, September would be the next one. So,
like, one last blitz before, you know, they launch it.
Yeah. September 8th, I guess, is the day I decided. So
right.
Watch out. Stay tuned. September 8th. We'll know more.
Calling my shot.
Yeah.
All right, we will leave it there for this week. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our modernist architecture tower. We live in here.
Check every out those floor, angles.
Every floor is more podcasts. Come on by and bring your friends. Share us wherever you happen to find podcasts.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.